Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Pivotal Change. I am your host, Ryan Kahn with CS Business Consulting, and this is a show that is all about growth, building yourself as a leader, whether it's an executive team or you just have a little bit of influence and you want to grow that influence. This is where you find more ways to gain ground on your path to success and hopefully find those one or two things to reach your pivotal change. Have a very special episode tonight because we have a wonderful guest, Leslie Everett. She has quite the resume. She's a very impressive woman that has done a lot of good for a lot of great people for a long time. She is an internationally recognized and award-winning professional keynote speaker. She's a consultant and a coach of executive branding, and she is known for her content-rich and engaging practical advice that helps everybody improve their delivery. She's worked and presented in over 28 countries in front of over 200 executives and some of the world's largest organizations. She's published 3 books, and she is an award winner on the Hall of Fame Professional Speaking Award of Excellence in the UK. She's the first female speaker to ever have done that. And she's the past president of the Global Speakers Federation. She's from Britain, and she is based out of Monterey, California now. So, Leslie, thank you so much for coming on this episode.
A pleasure. Thank you, Ryan.
Well, Leslie, one of the things I like to do is I always like to encourage my audience to listen with a pen and paper and take notes so they can document what we say and hopefully take a little bit home with them that they can implement right away. And I also like to kind of jump right into things. So I'm just going to start hitting you up with some of these questions. So you're about branding, and a lot of it is about finding a little bit more of the core of your person. And when people do that, what's the most common gap that you see between people on how they view themselves and how they view how others actually see them?
Yeah, it's one of the common things that I see when I'm coaching leaders is that they perceive themselves in one way, and the perception that others have may not quite align with that. And you know, that's inevitable. It's never going to be exactly there. But if it's way off, then we're in danger of sabotaging our reputation, the legacy we leave, the way that we lead, the trust that people have in us. So there are gaps at times, and it's sometimes I think people try and be somebody they're not in the workplace at whatever level they're working at. And we try and just do what we think and be who we think other people want us to be. And those are some of the common mistakes I see. And then that lacks authenticity. And then that gap increases and inconsistencies come in. So, you know, it's really important to make sure that we narrow that gap and make sure we're clear about what it is we want to project about ourselves so that people see it in the way that we intend it. So it's taking more control, if you like, over our leadership brand or our personal brand.
I like that a lot. And I can really appreciate, I do a fair amount of leadership coaching as well, in finding the core of who you are and not being somebody different. Like, you really emphasize the authenticity of who you are, and also really appreciate that you didn't use language that said eliminate the gap or remove the gap. You just want to reduce the gap to where it's something that can be, you know, stepped over or hopped over, because if it's too big, people are going to fall into it and bad things will happen after that. So very good points. Thank you for that. Sometimes we also know that we have our reputation, or what we think our reputation is. How do you help people uncover blind spots in their reputation?
Yeah, I think it's important at this point to just make a distinction between brand and reputation. It's a question I get asked quite a lot, and I think we can build from there. So I always believe that brand is that bold statement that we make about ourselves, or even if it's a product brand, you know, it's that brand, that bold statement that we make. This is what you're going to get when you work with me. Our LinkedIn profile, that little tagline we have, this is what I do. But your reputation is the reality of that. It's how it's played out in everyday life with every interaction that you have. So what I get executives and leaders and people that are, and entrepreneurs that I work with to do is to really put the brakes on, take a step back, let's extract what it is that you really are good at, that you stand out for, which you can't see easily yourself. I often say we can't see the label from inside the bottle. So, you know, when we're enclosed in it, we can't see what people see on the outside. So that's where an external person like me or you comes in to help them unravel what those gems are of what they really should be known for. And the backstory and, you know, the DNA and the experiences they've had in life all add up to this. So it's really important that we extract that, articulate it, and then start to add the layers that project that out there rather than try and build a brand not really knowing what the basis of it is.
I really like that. I'm a huge fan of definitions. So you just kind of really made me smile a little bit that the brand is different. It's that bold statement. And then the reputation is kind of the reality or the way that's lived out to very short summarize your wisdom that you gave us. I really like also that there's layers to it and there's an uncovering process and a realization process. And I think it goes back to that first question of, the brand is more of the vision, the perfect version of what you want to make a statement about, and the reputation you want to get as close to living out the truth of what you believe your brand is, maybe. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it is, and it's closing that gap. And if the more work we can do on really defining who we are right now, what really motivates us, what our purpose is, and then live to that and add those layers, the more consistent we're going to be. It's very difficult to be consistent if we're being unauthentic, if we're not being who we truly are. And people are scared of being who they truly are. It's like, I don't want to uncover those things that about me. It's not to do with my professional life, but sometimes when we uncover pieces about our life story, people really get who we are and why we think and do things the way that we do things, good and bad sometimes. We can help people to understand who we are, what we stand for, where we come from, what our values are. It's really important to articulate and uncover that and live to that as much as we possibly can.
I think your point that you're making as well is a lot of people are afraid to reveal who they truly are, so they pretend. And of course, just like lies, it's very hard to keep up that false pretense for a long time. So the truth is the best option always, truth in your reputation, personality, as well as just generally speaking, the truth. So I'm sure, and I know, in fact, I'm not just sure, I know that you've helped people close this gap. Do you have any stories or examples of how you've done that, or people have been able to get closer to the reputation to the brand?
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple ones. Obviously, with every client I work with, there's multiple things that we can uncover, and the background story of people's lives is so important to bring out appropriately and in a relevant way. I always remember working with a lady who was CEO of a big global nonprofit organization. And she was a very good speaker, or she was very sort of flamboyant in the way she spoke, very confident. And she said something to me that I share a lot with people. And she said, when I was younger, I didn't used to be like this. I couldn't actually speak well, or I didn't think I could, and I was really quiet and introverted. And she said, I was at school, and it came that time of year where we had to the school had to select their next head girl. And she said, and I was very quiet. I really didn't get involved. It was obvious who was going to get the head girl role. It was the attractive blonde girl who was out there and bubbly and everybody loved. And she said, I got to thinking, this is not fair that this person should just get that role because of that. There are other people who are much as capable of doing this. And she said, I started to think that's not fair. So she said, that drove me, that strong value in me that I didn't really know I had, drove me to put myself forward for that role. And she got the role, and she developed from that point on. But the point of the story is that she really realized, thinking through some of the work that we did, this is what uncovered this, that one of her top values was fairness. And that drove her to do that. And sometimes I think when leaders go through their life, or we do in our careers, not realizing who we are and what drives us and our values, then we miss out on opportunities to be who we truly are and express that, and for other people to treat us in the way that we should be. So that's just one of the thousands of stories of how somebody's got in touch with who they really are and what drives them.
I love that. What a wonderful story. And yeah, that's a good motivator for a lot of people to think about. So with that reputation in mind, why does reputation matter in today's business? Probably more than ever.
Yeah, and it does. You're absolutely right. And it's about trust, I believe. There are many components of that, trust and credibility. And the world we live in today, trust has always been there. But I think the world we're in today, we all search for trust subconsciously, consciously, whatever. It's the thing that we look for most, that recommendation from somebody, working with somebody that we know we recommend it every time, not every time, but most times. I've had it again this week, a new executive coaching client. Can you give me some references of who you've worked with? Yeah, sure. I have a reputation, but they want that. They want to have that expressed to them in a way that they can trust and add to their own research. So reputation really, I think, is the basis of trust and then relationships that we can build from that. It cuts out a lot of the other areas that we don't necessarily want to rely on for us to move forward in a business partnership or whatever it is. So that reputation is built over a period of time, and that is what gets you where you want to be, I think, in your career and in your leadership role.
Very good. And I like you emphasizing that it's built over time. It's not just something you get in 30 seconds when you meet somebody. It's built the trust, the credibility, the reliability. So before we're up against a commercial break, but we can get a quick answer. What small steps could the viewers and listeners today go and take this week to get some real feedback and how they are perceived?
The first thing I always say is that the reason why people don't do this and look at their brand is because of time, perceived lack of time. So the first thing is putting that time slot in your calendar, maybe an hour this week. It's the simplest, smallest thing you can do to actually get some feedback. And then formulate some questions. Maybe ask some selected people who you know are going to give you honest feedback, not always people that you have the best relationships with, but ask them, what are the three things that you would used to describe me if you were talking about me behind my back. And it's really important that you get honest, candid feedback. So just three words, simple question of people. They can take a while to answer, a couple of days if they need to, but just say, I just want you to give me three words that come to mind when you think of me. And that's a great start. And
I
it's
love it.
often the feedback that I'll get from my clients as well if they need me to.
That's perfect. So go put an hour in your calendar, get three people that you trust, and get three pieces of feedback. That's wonderful. We're going to take this moment to jump to a commercial break, but don't go anywhere. We're going to be back talking about a deeper dive into first impression factor. So stay tuned for more Leslie and more Pivotal Change right after this. Welcome back from the break. We have more Pivotal Change and more Leslie Everett coming right up. I know that you like what you're watching, and sometimes, unfortunately, life makes you miss an episode, but that's okay. You can stream Now Media TV live 24/7. TV shows live on demand. You can get it in Roku or iOS. You can enjoy this instant access and bilingual programming, both English and Spanish. Here's another great part. Sometimes you can't watch and you can only listen. Well, there is a podcast format as well. If you prefer to listen on the go, catch that at nowmedia.tv. You'll be able to find everything you need, Pivotal Change, and all of our other shows, from business to breaking news, lifestyle, culture, and everything in between. Now Media TV is streaming 24/7 whenever and wherever you are. So knowing that, you get this episode at the click of a button anytime you need it. So Leslie, welcome back. And I think we're getting ready to talk about some first impressions and take the conversation forward from there. So let me ask you this question. How quickly do people really form an opinion of us? And why does that opinion matter so much?
Yeah, it's a lot faster than we think. I mean, studies are showing us 5 to 7 seconds. But you know, I was reading an article not so long ago that suggested it can take just 10 milliseconds to form an impression of somebody. You know, that might be on a screen, it might be
Wow.
face to face, it could even be before we've even met from social media profiles, etc. But typically we take in the non-verbal communication instantly. So it'll be appearance and body language. When somebody then starts to speak, it's not so much what's said at that stage that forms the first impression, it's how it's said within seconds. So how does the voice sound? Is it credible? Is it worth listening to? Can I hear it without struggling too much? Is it mumbled or is it crystal clear? So it's the non-verbal, then how we say something, and then if we like what we see and how we hear, subconsciously, we're hooking into the content much more effectively or not, as the case may be. So it's not about nonverbal being more important than content, because sometimes people get that mixed up, but it is about setting the scene and making sure you've got the best chance of people engaging with what you're going to say next by getting that nonverbal piece right and the clarity in the voice right before the all-important content.
I like that. Like you said, people may even see you, observe you, or get a taste of you before they ever meet you or hear your voice walking across the room. Like you just said, social media profiles are so important. If you look like a knucklehead online and then try to go have some professional conversations, it could really detract from who you are. I think that's so important. And a lot of us don't have a conscious concentration on that. And I'm glad there's people out there like you to help people with that. It's so important. So a lot of things come down to really managing your details. So what are some of the overlooked details that make or break a first impression?
Yeah, I mean, they haven't changed a lot, to be honest, over the years. And this, but it, I do feel it's about making people feel comfortable. So making people feel significant, that they're respected, and that you are really interested in interacting with them. And simple things like eye contact. You know, some people naturally don't find the eye contact easy. It's important to be aware of that, because it's something that we really should work on, so that somebody feels like you're really, truly listening to them and not all over the place. A smile, you know, we're in a world right now where we need to have that happiness and smiling. It makes people feel good. I feel good when I go to the grocery store and the person at the checkout counter talks to me and smiles. You know, I think we all feel that. It just adds to the pleasure in your day. So, and body language. I often say to people in audiences or training sessions, you know, what does a good first impression look like when it walks through the door or walks on the stage? How do you describe that? And the things I get back are always nonverbal things. So it can be the handshake as well. But if we're on a screen, I think one thing that we have to be careful with now, with the amount of time that we now spend on screen since COVID particularly, is not letting down our barriers really on appearance and how we dress. Just think about how you're coming across, making sure you're positioned on the screen in the right way, that you're not down here, which lacks credibility, where you and I are right now. Of course, we should know what we're doing with that. But I do see a lot of people that, you know, have a lot of distractions. They're in a silhouette. That's hugely distracting and gets really in the way of the message that you're trying to get across. So, yeah, it's a few things there, but a lot of it will come down to the individual and what's needed.
I like that too. And I like that people actually know this. You said, like, in your interviews and your research, you're finding that people are giving all of these nonverbal cues, like how you walk into the room and present yourself. Your clothing has a decent part of it too. You don't want to be the poorest dressed person in the room. It's always better to overdress than underdress. Mm. And we get a lot of, like you said, the Zoom activity, people wearing pajamas on camera and stuff like that. And it just detracts from your credibility. So I appreciate you emphasizing those details for us. And surely there has to be an example of somebody that's transformed the way they make first impressions and are perceived by people. Do you have any fun stories to share?
There's many, I suppose, in different ways. And, you know, one of the things, well, there's two things I'll share here. One of the things really is when we can let people into our world a little bit more, and we relax into a conversation, they know a little bit more about us other than maybe the professional setting we're in. People engage with us better. It's making them feel relaxed. We have better communication. So that helps. But I also call it, there's a halo or a horns effect that I think we need to be aware of here. And it was an experience that I had that really brought this home to me. So if we have a good experience of somebody in a first impression in, say, a 5-minute conversation, what we're then doing subconsciously is adding to that positive first impression. We'll pick up on other positive things they say, other positive vibes we get, and we're adding to that positive first impression. The same happens if it's a negative first impression. Subconsciously, we pick up on other negative things that they might say. And then what we do is pick up on other negative things that other people might say about that person, or we read about, or we hear about. And it compounds the impression we have. And that really never goes away. It takes a long while. And I remember a situation where I was looking forward to meeting this lady who was very well known in the image industry when I started out, really, many years ago. And I was looking forward to meeting her in this room. I went over to shake her hand, and as she shook my hand, she was looking over my shoulder at somebody far more important than me that had come into the room and kind of was walking off at the same time as shaking my hand. That was an incredibly bad first impression that
Right.
then played out over the years because I just added to that subconsciously when I heard other things about aloofness, superiority, rudeness that added to her reputation at the time. Never went away. And I always remember her getting in touch, asking me if I wanted to be involved in a business venture she had going in the US. And I knew that I couldn't work with her because of that breakdown. So, you know, there's lots of illustrations of how we can make or break a first impression. First impressions last. We know that. So all we've got to do is make sure we make that great impression and keep building on it and adding the layers as we go forward.
Yes, I think that's fantastic. And I think probably most people in life have had a similar experience where they almost had a dismissive encounter with someone and it, you know, deflated and eventually cost her money because working with you, I'm sure, is profitable. And so the way that that works is really important. And I like that you said you have to make a first impression and then keep building on it. Right. So the impressions are going to last, and that turns into reputation, credibility, relationships, things like that that we've spoken about. So very, very good points. So there's got to be a little bit of a balance here. You know, I can think of somebody, and there's probably a lot of people, I can think of several that take great pain in making sure that they look the exact right part. They go out there and they make the shell of themselves very impressive to get that first impression, but they're maybe lacking some substance. On the same side, you may have the perfect person with all of the exact answers you need, but there's no first impression to be had, so you might dismiss that person. Where's the balance?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? And I don't think anyone ever gets the perfect balance, but again, it comes back to knowing who we are and then being crystal clear about that and adding the layers with every interaction, every day saying, I know this is the brand that I want to project. What am I doing today to project that? I often use an analogy of a pearl in an oyster. If you think about a pearl growing organically inside an oyster, layers get added every day and it gradually evolves, exactly the same as your brand or your reputation, is being conscious of what you want to add as a layer, and then you'd be more likely to add the positive layers and be aware of the negative or the weakening layers that you're adding there. So it's consciously being aware of what we're adding and making sure that we manage those gaps that could start to appear.
Very good. Very good. I love the oyster analogy. I'm huge into metaphors and analogies, so I definitely appreciate that one. And the more layers you add, the more you build yourself, the more valuable you and your brand are. Stay true to your brand. So we're coming up to another commercial break, but I want to know in the first 30 seconds that impression. We know 5 and 7 seconds is really important. What is something that somebody could just go tweak to have that first 30 seconds be a better, impactful 30 seconds?
Really, I think the best thing to do is to the next meeting that you're in, whether that's online or whether it's in person, is be conscious of it and think about it afterwards. You know, what did I do? Did I arrive late and I look flustered? Did I arrive on the screen and didn't have my video on for the first 5 minutes because I'm eating my breakfast or drinking coffee or, you know, not looking the part and have to put my lipstick on? You know, just analyze. After the event, what impression did I make? What happened? And ideally, before the event, just consciously taking a couple of minutes to think about it, because that's what's missing. We don't often have it up here on our radar to think about consciously. And that will go a long way if you just think about it consciously. Okay, is
Love
everything
that.
together? Am I turning up early? Am I ready?
That is perfect. So debrief yourself, look at the last encounter you just had, and then discover your weaknesses and work on them. That's the best way to find your first 30 seconds. Don't be eating breakfast on camera. That's another good one. Well, good spot for us to put another time out here. We're halfway through the episode, but sit tight. Pivotal Change and Leslie will be right back after this. You've reached the halfway point on this episode of Pivotal Change, and there is still a lot more expertise and wisdom to come. We're going to keep going with Leslie Everett, and she has a great background on speaking and helping executives internationally. So we're going to move into talking a little bit more about global and cultural abilities to make that influence and those lasting impressions. So Leslie, you've worked with leaders all over the world. What surprised you the most about establishing a global presence?
I think the most surprising thing is that wherever you are in the world, people honor and respect from people. And whether that's you're going to speak it to an audience, whether you're doing business, whether you're just having meetings or even social things, I think respect is something that is globally needed and expected of us. And we have to work out, of course, what respect looks like in different cultures that we're going into. But it is respect, and it comes back to that trust thing as well, especially if we're in a different culture, is understanding that culture and building trust with whoever we're with, to know that, for them to know that we understand their environment as well. So that's the thing that surprised me most. Wherever I go, we're all human beings. We all share a planet. We all share the similar human values in a way that leads to respect and trust. So, you know, there's a lot of commonality there. That said, there's a lot of differences too.
I really like the emphasis of respect. Respect is ultimately an international global language. And you mentioned it without saying the word study, but you said knowing what to expect and knowing the culture. And we should, if we're going to have any type of global presence, probably study a little bit to know what respect is and how it's given and how it's received, so that you know if you're being respected, there's an intelligence quotient there, and you know if you're properly giving respect to those that you're trying to build some type of relationship or network with. So yeah, all very good points. Thank you. So I'm sure when some of these cultural differences come up, how do you help them to shape your personal brand and make sure that it's received the right way?
Yeah, so if you have a basis of building respect wherever we're going, which is the basis of building a relationship, I've seen it way too often, especially in the international speaking world, where speakers will go out to another country without doing the homework and understanding some of the fundamental differences of that culture, looking at local knowledge. What do you know about the local area that you're going to be going to? Because if we can bring in some local things, ask the right questions, show that we've done a bit of research and understanding, that's a huge way forward when we're setting a first impression in that culture. So one of the things I see is missing is doing the preparation and understanding what's needed. And, you know, I spoke in Iran several years ago now, back in 2011. That was a huge culture change, of course, and especially as a woman. And I was presenting at a conference there of 1,000 strong. I had to be very, very aware, and I thoroughly checked it, double checked it, the outfit I could wear and what are some of the customs and cultural differences. There were still a couple of things I didn't get quite right, but I know that the amount of effort I'd put in to get to 95% of what I needed to do was really well respected and really well received. So, you know, we think we know it sometimes. We think, oh, well, we know how to behave. We know what we're supposed to do. We know about not to talk about certain things within a presentation, but there are other little nuances and we need to do thorough research. And with AI now, we can easily get that.
I think that's great. With AI, Google, all of that stuff, you can do it a lot. And I'm going to deviate on a funny story on this one, because you're talking about doing the research. And I saw that presentation you gave in Iran was very good. And you had your address was completely different. So you did your research, and I am positive that meant a lot to especially certain members of your audience. Is really important. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also important, too, that if you know there's a nuance in the culture that you're coming from, you explain the nuance. My father worked internationally for a long time for a major corporation and had to spend a lot of time in Japan. And he is a very extroverted, charismatic, large individual, which is very different than a lot of their very humble, honorable stuff. So he ended up giving people hugs and caught them off guard. But he explained to them, if I give you a hug, that means you are important to me. That means I trust you and I consider you a friend. And at the end of his visits, he did like basically three tours in Japan. People were desiring to be basically worthy of receiving a hug from this American. And so I think that really builds the culture that you can share your culture, but be ready to do your homework and make sure that you are appropriately building respect and relationships. Super great points of emphasis. Have you ever made a mistake? Is there any mistakes that you can make that failure hopefully cause you to fail forward and learn from? But I'm curious if there's been any.
Well, actually, I did make a mistake in Iran, and it was to do with dress, and I knew that I had to wear things that covered curves, basically. And I had a trouser suit, or pants suit, as you would call in America, where the jacket came down pretty low. But I arrived at the airport. My husband came with me on that trip. They wanted him to come with me, and I did too. And I'd got a kind of short ski jacket on and jeans when I arrived. And I remember the guy who dropped us at the airport, at the hotel from the airport, saying, "Do you have a longer coat?" And I said, "Oh, no, I don't." He said, "Well, you're okay in the hotel, but you need to have a longer coat outside." So then I started to question the pantsuit that I'd got and the jacket length. And to cut a long story short, I checked that out the next day. Luckily, I was there 2 days in advance. And there was this, not quite sure if it's long enough or not. Okay, didn't want to take the risk. I had to go out and buy a whole new jacket, which was, and I'm only 5'1½ tall. So that's a real challenge for me to find an outfit that works for me on a stage. So I made a mistake, but I corrected it. And I think that that became a funny story amongst the locals there in Iran, that they knew I'd done that and went to the trouble to fix it.
That's funny and good catch and good honesty from the person there. There's always people looking out. Nobody really wants to see anybody just get a black eye and going in there and just and have that moment. So one, good for you to pivot. And again, I'm sure that meant a lot to a lot of people. So is there anything that we talked about some of the differences and changes, and we've talked about respect, of course, but is there anything that just remains universal no matter where you go?
Yeah, apart from the respect, let me think. I think just everybody appreciates when you take the time to understand their local environment, not just the overall culture. I mentioned it a little earlier, but if you can understand and get to, if you're going to work in a different country, just get there. If it's a short visit, a few days before, visit the local markets, visit the local farm shops or whatever it might be in the local entertainment. Because when you can build that into your conversations or if you're presenting in your presentations, people really appreciate that you have understood what their daily life is like. So I think this local thing for me is something that I've always done and I've always seen as appreciated wherever I've gone. You can see people's faces light up. Oh, you went to the local market. Oh, wow. And you went to the local art museum or whatever it is. And you pick up little things, stories that you can build into conversations. That's universal. Yep.
I like
Makes
that a
me
lot.
proud.
And I think that's super important because you're showing care and interest. And most people's favorite topic is themselves. And even if that's their hometown and their culture, like everyone loves the home team, right? And so if you learn about that and you experience, like, oh, you guys had this great little cafe. I had breakfast the other day. They get now a local engaged conversation instead of just talking business all of the time. I think that's a really good universal truth. And I like that a lot. I appreciate you sharing that with us. So that was pretty much a tip. Do you have any other tips if people, like a professional, wants to be more effective in specifically leading when they cross the border?
I think, rather than just rely on Google or AI, is get some real advice from somebody on the ground there. So, for example, as a speaker, what I will do is talk to the meeting planner, talk to the sponsor of the conference. I will also ask to speak to three or four members of that audience so that I can check that my content is going to land. Or if I've got humor, there's another big thing there. If humor might be funny here, in the in North America, for example, it may not be funny when you go to someone like Japan or Malaysia or whatever. So talking to local people as well in the audience, this is the content I'm going to share in overview. Does this land well with you? Is this the type of thing you need to hear? Is there anything I need to be aware of not to include? So the level of prep actually then goes down to another level. And that is so important if you're going to be in a prominent role going there as a leader, somebody that they're going to be looking up to, meeting a new team that may be working for you in another country. Very important that you do that check beforehand.
I love that so much. I mean, I'm hilarious on all seven continents, but I think a lot of other people might struggle. No, I think that's really important because I think there's some people that have some seriously different humor and
Oh,
cultural
yeah.
lines. It may appear extremely insulting or personal when it's really just a little cliche statement and a little offhand joke. So that is a good one. And then I really like you sampling the audience. Get there and say, hey, what if I said this joke, or hey, is this a story or a metaphor that would make sense to you? Me being a person of metaphors, I've actually used them and then had to explain the metaphor. And I was like, I should have done better there, right? I should have done a little more research.
That's
So that's
right.
fantastic. Well, Leslie, we've got one final segment coming up. So everyone sit tight. I know your notebook is probably getting full because she is unloading incredible amounts of expertise and wisdom on us. But we'll be right back after these messages with the final segment of the night of Pivotal Change. Welcome back. And as Pivotal Change is about to wrap up the night with our final segment, it's important that you know where to find us in case you want to watch this episode again. You didn't get to take all of those notes you were hoping to take. 24/7 access is now available. So don't miss a moment of Pivotal Change or any of the other shows that we offer. Any of your favorites can be found at nowmedia.tv at the website. You can get live on demand anywhere, Roku, iOS, download the app. You can get this instant access. And you can get a full lineup of all the bilingual programming that's English and Spanish. Watch anywhere in the world. And here's the cool part. I'm big into podcasts, and if you are too, you don't have time to watch and visibly observe the episode. You can get them on podcast and audio format as you drive, fly, work out in the gym. So Now Media TV is ready wherever and whenever you are. So with that information, I hope everyone is ready to take notes for the final segment of the night. Leslie Everett is here with us, the international speaker, and she just got done speaking with us a lot about culture and global crossovers with leadership. So now I want to do a little bit about what is a legacy? How do we build legacy? And what does it mean to you and your personal brand to have a legacy?
Yeah, something that's cropping up a lot at the moment with clients and in senior exec leadership roles is, needing to think about the legacy I leave and what does that actually mean. The way I start to look at that and some tips for your the viewers is that I use a technique to set an objective, to really create the objective that is clear and timelined and is meaningful to you. And if you can set that objective with what you want to leave in, whether it's 5 years' time, 10 years' time, when you retire or when you sell your business, or whether it's when you finish that project, whatever it might be, setting an objective that starts with, I want to. So it's very much about you as an individual and clarifying that. I want to be remembered, or I want to be respected as a leader who did this, or as whatever, by a certain date. And it's very specific. We put a date in there, not just end of 2028 or whatever, but a very specific date. The brain copes very well with that. And then finally, so that I, and this is a bit where you really get to think about, why do I want to do that? What does it give me personally when I create that legacy? And this sounds a little bit all about us. And it shouldn't be. Some people have a challenge with that, but this bit does need to be about you. What does it give you? How does it make you feel when you achieve that? A great analogy here is everybody would used to think that Mother Teresa, of course, was 100% altruistic. Well, actually, she wasn't, because there was an inner driver in her. There had to be for her to be able to achieve what she did. There was an inner purpose in her, an inner motivator, an inner driver that led her to be able to achieve all the amazing things that she did, and multiple people like her. So we have to have that defined as to what's in it for me. What do I get at the end? And then we can start planning.
I like that. I like that. So in this specific legacy, it is your legacy of you and your brand. So you have to make it personal on purpose for this one. And again, huge fan of putting actual calendar dates. And I tell people, remind yourself 1 year, 2 year, 3 years from now to look back and observe your growth and things like that. And in this one, it would say establish your legacy through this process by this calendar date. And hopefully they're putting a lot of reminders, a lot of action steps with their goals along the way. So that's really important. So we know that we want to have the short-term success. We want to focus on the leadership, the reputation, the mission of the brand and everything. But we also need to be shifting and constantly thinking to some longer-term stuff. So where is the shift going to occur to be focused on today's tasks, but really tomorrow's reputation?
Yeah, it's really a kind of working backwards. So if we have a plan to say, I don't know, retire in 10 years' time, let's look at what the 7-year goal looks like. Where do you need to be financially in your life to do that? What about 5 years? And let's bring that back right down to the next year. And let's plan out the next 6 months of what are the key things you need to be achieving and working on. I often say that you can look at a goal as a across a lake of water. And to get to the other side, you have stepping stones, various stepping stones you have to jump on. No particular order necessarily, but you have to jump on each of them in order to reach the end goal. So we look at building perhaps your own individual MBA program, if you like. What are the things I need to build on? What are the skills I need to create or evolve with? What extra learning do I need? What do I need to get greater in this period? There's a great book as well that helps with this legacy setting and mindset by Arthur C. Brooks, I think it is, called Strength to Strength. I don't know if you've come across that, Ryan, but
Wow.
he talks about two parts of our career. There's the first part of our career where we can innovate, and it's called fluid intelligence. And we get to a point in our career where we make the switch, if we're smart, to crystallized intelligence and wisdom that we can then pass on to others rather than doing the stuff all the time. And that's often the shift. So having a plan like that, breaking it down, coming back to the smallest steps helps us to be able to build that into our everyday lives when we can be very much around firefighting or tasks for the day. It breaks it down to as small as possible and we can make those steps.
I like that a lot. And I think that's really important to just break things out. You know, we have the big cliches, how to eat an elephant one bite at a time, but there's so
Yeah.
much truth to some of these cliches and these terms that we have that just actively doing it. And like you said, working backwards. I love the point of like, well, if you want to retire in 10 years, what do your finances look at the 7 year mark? You know, that should be a little bit of a slap to the face of most people that are even remotely taking this serious to make that happen. And so one of the things that I always do, and I do it more of a coaching, mindset, especially it comes up with the teens and the younger people that I work with, is like you keep sacrificing your long-term goals, your long-term gains for the quick wins, the short-term stuff. So tell us about some of those dangers of ignoring that long-term impact with your decisions for these favorable quick wins or possible shortcuts or easy buttons.
Yeah, I mean, the main one is that we just lose track of what we're doing. If we don't know where we're going, the journey can take all sorts of twists and turns. And you know, life is like that as well. I'm very much a fan of having a goal, but you don't quite know exactly how you're going to get there. It could be a zigzag line to get there, but at least you're still aiming for that long-term goal. If we don't have that, I've seen it a lot, that burnout can happen. One of the biggest things I find myself coaching on, I don't know about you, is delegating, stopping this firefighting, getting out of the weeds as a leader, being able to strategize, set time aside to think. If we don't do that, we're not being as productive as we need to be. Therefore, we're not adding the steps that are going to get us to where we want to get to. And along the way, we're going to drop people from the team. People are going to get demotivated. If we're not leading and strategizing and looking at the bigger picture, all sorts of things can happen that we miss. on a day-to-day basis. So we have to get out of the weeds. It's imperative to reach where you want to be.
I love that. And that is one thing that is huge for me, is having people delegate properly through mentorship so that they can be working on the company instead of being stuck in the weeds working in the company. So that's absolutely a huge thing that I see. I'll confirm exactly what you said and your level of expertise and experience on that one for sure. And so as we do this and we work towards those goals and we actively apply that consistent long-term thinking, that's another part of building our reputation, part of the theme of this threading throughout this entire episode. So leaders are going to do that, but when they remove themselves and delegate, they're not around as much. So how can a leader actively shape what's being said about them and how their reputation is maintained when they're not around?
Yeah, good point. And this comes back to what culture do you want to build in the team? And a lot of these things all go hand in hand. So if we build a culture in the team, a transparent culture, open to feedback, then that serves to make sure that we know what's going on. I'm working with several leaders at the moment and a lot of their teams, and I can see that when we introduce a culture of transparency, what actually happens is people within the team and the leader themselves can take the feedback much more positively and deal with it if there's negative stuff to be dealt with. So it's building a transparent and open culture, and then there's less likelihood of stuff being said about us behind our back that we don't know about and that's not favorable.
Love that concentration on that transparent, healthy culture amongst everybody just inherently protects the leader's reputation as well. I love that.
Yeah.
So last question of the night, got a quick response because then I want to do something with you. But what is one intentional step that somebody can take today to start shaping that legacy brand?
Put the brakes on, stop, pause, go out for a walk, take the phone, record yourself thinking. And I call it a Meta One exercise where you talk about what your life looks like in, it could be a year's time, 5 years' time, 10 years' time. Talk in the present tense, record it. Today I'm doing this, I'm going to the gym, and then I have a great meeting with somebody that's talking about a new TV show that I might have. So, talk about what you want your life to look like, but in the present tense. And that is more powerful than you can even imagine as an exercise. So I think that's, and it's fun. Everybody loves to do that. So
Love
go
it.
for a walk, put the recorder on, and see what comes out.
That's perfect. So, speaking of new things coming up in life, Leslie, you have an announcement for our office that I want you to talk about. Before we close out for the entire night, tell us about a new show that's coming up on Now Media TV Network.
Yeah, thank you, Ron. I'm thrilled to be hosting my own show very soon. We should be broadcasting during October, called Executive Success with Leslie Everett. And it's exciting for me because over the years, I've built a massive network of incredibly successful leaders and executives. And I want to be able to tap into a lot of that wisdom to see how they've overcome hurdles, how they deal with vulnerability, how they deal with challenging situations, whatever it might be, to help them to build the executive success that they've got. And we'll be bringing in lots of experts on this field as well. So not just about branding, but everything that goes towards building your success as a leader and an executive. So I'm very excited about that.
That's so perfect. That's wonderful. And Leslie, where can people find you if they want to find you, get a hold of your brain, your services, and get help from you?
The best place is email. So it's Leslie, and that's spelled Lesley, as you can see on the screen here, at leslieeverett.com. And that's my website as well. So you can reach me via email or via the website.
So perfect. Thank you so much for coming on the show, giving us these wonderful insights and the fantastic conversation. And then for everyone else out there, thank you for watching Pivotal Change. I want you to go out into the world. I want you to see the change and be the change. We'll catch you next time on Pivotal Change.